This episode is brought to you by Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Whether you're selling flaky salt or fine art prints, Shopify covers all your sales channels to simplify selling online and in person. Plus, they provide industry-leading tools and 24/7 support to ignite your growth. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. To sign up, visit shopify.co.uk/podcast23, all lowercase.
Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
2023, you guys, and I'm winging it. Hi, it's Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. That's the website, The Dork Forest, if you like a determiner. Dorkforest.com also works. JackieCation.com has all of my stand-up information. Like, it has videos, it has pictures, it has links to this podcast and to my other podcast with Lori Kilmartin. It has a merch store that has Dork Forest t-shirts. It has all of my stand-up merch and all of my CDs and DVDs. So that's what you know about websites. There's an opportunity, because we're in the new year here, that you can donate to the Dork Forest. I don't have a Patreon. I don't have anything really set up, though I understand you can set up on PayPal a monthly if you wanted to. You could donate and be of to support the show. This is the 17th season, the 17th year I've been putting this stuff out. It's free, but if you have money and would like to throw me some money, boy, howdy. There's a PayPal, there is at my email address, actually, jackie@jackiecation.com, which you can also email me and tell me how much you're enjoying the show. You can also do Venmo if you'd like, which is just Jackie Cation, no hyphen, all one word, picture of this person, me. And then I think that's it. I think I have Zelle, but it's too complicated. Other than that, let's do the credits. Patrick Brady, still in, fixing the audio all these years later. Give it up to Patrick Brady. That's what a lot of your donations support, by the way, because I like to share the wealth. And then Vilmos, he does the websites. And Mike Rickberg wrote and sang that song. Composed and sang that song with his wife now, Sarah. And at the end, he sings the Mexican Hat Dance, which is always fun. Anyway, I'm sure there's more to it. There's a band camp that has a bunch. It has like a stand-up storytelling album that was never released. It's there's also a bunch of live episodes that many of them are free. There were 200 episodes that were not pre-recorded, and I sort of culled through those, and I pulled like 17 of the best ones. There's an album collection of that, 17 hours of Dork Forest. If you run through all of the episodes, go to bandcamp.com, Dork Forest, or Google those words, and you'll find it. Anyway, there's probably more. I can't remember any of it, but you're doing great. Feel free to enjoy the show. Okay, Jackie Cation, doing a little bit of a Dork Forest on the fly with Jeff Baldinger. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me, Jackie. It's great to be back. It's great to be here. It's great to be
anywhere.
A last minute addition.
Well, you know, I have
amazing.
Yeah,
well,
there's.
We've been trying to do this for a long time. We've been
right.
Like the schedule has been back and forth. It's like, I'm available now. I can't do it now. I'm available this time. No, I'm available now. And
right. Well, it's the hardest part is the scheduling. So everybody who wants to do the Dork Forest, you can in theory.
And in theory.
Yes, it's all in theory, but I recommend that you be patient. You just have to be patient, because I'm in.
Well, that's why this worked out so well, because we've been going back and forth with I'm available now, I'm not available. Like, both of us have been like, hey, can you do it now? No, I can't. Can you do it now?
No, everyone, I can't. Everyone is very busy. So,
but then today.
But you said you were at 1966 the last time.
Yes, we
us discussing the scheduling, unless that is your dorkdom, can't possibly be of interest to the Rangers of the Dork Forest. Scheduling this program is actually Jeff Baldinger's dorkdom, you guys.
It's what I do. But I got the email, you know, I literally just got home from the airport, and I opened my computer, got the email. Can you do it right now? I'm like, actually I can.
Why not? It takes an hour. There's maybe 10 minutes of back and forth a little bit before and after. But it's at Jeff Baldinger on Twitter and Instagram, right? And
yes,
Baldinger is Baldinger.
Yep.
Your comic, very funny. Huntington
Thank you.
Beach on February 24th.
Yep.
Doing the Crockett, doing Seattle on July 20th, my birthday.
Yes. Oh, happy birthday. Nice.
Thank you. Don't forget to send the shout out.
I will send the shout out. I'll dedicate the whole show to you.
Finally. And that everybody should email me. And
exactly.
So,
yes.
Yes. So, but I think you were on, and it was still the Beatles.
It was. Yeah. We did the Beatles the last time I was on. And we got to 1966 when we got to the, like, the, I think the
I
last
think
thing
broke
I said,
up in like 75, did they, or
70, 1970.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Imagine, just imagine, Jeff, if they had five more years together.
Pun intended? Huh? Imagine John Lennon,
no,
solo career.
Sadly, imagine. I wish I had had a musical pun, because think about how great that would be.
It'd be the greatest.
Imagine is not a Beatles song. That is
it's
a
not.
Lennon.
It's a solo John Lennon song, and but it would have been is the 1970 song. But if we're going to take that imagination of what if they had stayed together for another 5 years, probably would have been on a Beatles album with Silly Little Love Songs, Ram, and All Things Must Pass, and Ringo's All I Want to Do Is Boogaloo. You know, it's great.
Okay, because everybody went solo. And
everybody went
did,
solo.
And everybody did put out more songs that... Did they all have kind of a Beatles vibe after... Did they kind of sound like Beatles songs after they parted?
The only ones that did was, in my opinion, and people can agree or disagree...
This is all my opinion. It's a charged topic.
Very much so. But in my opinion, the only solo Beatles album that really sounded like a Beatles album was Ringo's first album, because all of the Beatles played on it.
Oh, yeah, that would.
Each song on Ringo's first self-titled album, like there's a song that John wrote, there's a song that George wrote, there's a song that Paul wrote. They all wrote songs for him and performed with him and stuff like that. So like, I'm the Greatest is a John Lennon song, but he was like, it's going to sound too egotistical if I record it. So he gave it to Ringo. There's, you know, and it sounds very, but like
does
this collaboration. Sounds very, it sounds the Ringo self-titled 1970 Ringo album sounds the most like the next Beatles album.
That's interesting. And what was it called?
It was called Ringo.
Oh, was it? And
yeah.
Was it sort of a bit of a, at the time kind of GoFundMe?
I mean
it feels a little rude to say it, since they were all getting royalties, right?
Yeah, well,
did Ringo get royalties? Or
well, as far as the royalties go, that was a big reason why the Beatles broke up, is the money issue of the Beatles. But they had management issues. It was a whole thing. We can get into that.
They were printing money, I thought. I would imagine.
Well, people were printing money off of them, for sure.
And they weren't necessarily getting the bulk of it? Or
they were not getting the bulk of it. They were not millionaires at that time, as far as the people were screwing them around. And they made some bad business deals. That's a big reason like why the riff happened between Paul and John, is because John and George and Ringo all signed with this guy, Alan Klein, who was kind of a seedy manager, asshole guy. And
wait, a musical industry weasel?
It's unheard of. Unheard of. Unprecedented.
Unprecedented.
And yet this was a precedent that...
that was then followed.
That was then followed, because the Beatles are inspirations to us all, in all aspects. but Paul... didn't like Alan Klein, and he didn't want to sign to it because he was, you know, trying to get money out of what Paul had in with another manager who was his then wife, Linda Eastman's, I think, brother or father, some relative of Linda. Was the guy that Paul wanted to go with.
Right.
And the other three wanted to go with Alan Klein. History has proven Paul to be in the right on that one. But there was a lot of money issues dealing with the breakup, and it's why the animosity between Paul and John was so great in that moment, in that time period, because it was they were both hurt that the other one wanted to end the Beatles. Like, the story, you know, it's all hyperbolic and it's all hearsay because we weren't there, but we only have now we only have Paul's word on it. But the conversation right. between and that's another thing I want to get into. Lately, Paul has been doing a little, in my opinion, revisionist history on the end of the Beatles.
No rebuttals.
Because he can. No rebuttals. The only one who could is Ringo, and he's just happy to be around.
Right?
I mean, honestly, he's been happy to be around since he was 8 because he wasn't supposed to live past 6, I think.
Was he a sickly child?
He was a sickly child. He was a sickly child.
The 20th century, it was full of sickly children.
In Liverpool. That's just right. You got some more porridge. I don't know. but apparently, John said to Paul, like, so this is from John's perspective. This is an interview that John did in the 70s where he said, you know, I told Paul that I was ready to leave the group.
Okay.
And I said that to him. So I was the first one to say, it's me. I'm going to quit the Beatles. I'm ready to be done.
I'm breaking up. I'm going to break up with you. Yes.
Then Paul publicly declared that he was leaving the group. And so the public thought that Paul left the Beatles. And so there was that sort of thing.
Wow.
And so Paul, so the narrative was for a while, Paul broke up the Beatles. Paul left the group. But John was feeling like, no, it was me. John was always kind of like, I want to be the, rebel, the guy.
He wanted to be the lead singer. So Ross and Rachel, very Ross and Rachel.
Very Ross and Rachel, very Sam and Diane. If we're going to take references from things that are,
moonlighting.
Moonlighting. Very, I'll take, Nick and Jess from New Girl. I'll take it closer.
It's probably more like Luke and Laura from General Hospital.
There it is.
He raped her, and then they fell in love.
Well, that's a classic love story, right?
Right. Or, it's the '70s all over. It's the '70s all over. Yeah. So,
oh my God.
Okay, so they both claim to sort of be the one to say I want out.
Right, but now Paul has been very adamant about John being the reason that the Beatles broke up. He's been saying, like, John said that we were going to break up.
Okay.
But there is a thing, I don't know if you watched the Get Back series on Disney Plus.
Okay.
It's, if you have a spare 9 hours, it's a great watch. but there's a scene in there where George and John are talking to each other. And George is, kind of, in his feelings about not getting enough songs on the album, as he's wont to do. He's got a lot of them.
Sure.
And he was kind of talking to John about maybe releasing just a solo George album, but still being with the Beatles. And John was like, yeah, that sounds good to me. Like, we should be free to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
And Paul apparently, Paul was away during that time. And Paul, having watched that scene with Peter Jackson, had never seen that before. And he was reacting like, if I had known that that was in the narrative, we probably wouldn't have broken up the way we did. If we all just were like on the same page, like, hey, we'll still be together.
A band, but
and we'll still be a band, but we are also free to do our own solo stuff. Like, if I had known what would have happened, like that sort of stuff. Because him and John, during that time, John was very infatuated with Yoko and on heroin and just not always in the right mind.
I like that those are equal.
I mean, love is a drug. Heroin's a drug. It's this whole aspect. But it,
sure.
And I think I mentioned this on the last time I was up there. But people hate Yoko, and there are reasons to hate Yoko, and there are reasons that you shouldn't. Most people hate her because they're misogynistic and racist.
Okay.
Those are not that's why most of the people hated her back then.
They were like, look at that nice white boy. He's going to date this Asian woman.
Yes. They hated Linda too, because they took Paul off. She took Paul off the market. That's the baseline is like, we want the Beatles to, they should be single. We want them.
Rock Hudson should be straight. The Beatles should always be single.
Exactly.
Okay.
But then there's the people who like vehemently hate on Yoko because she's Japanese, she's there all the time, she's always she's like interrupting. She can't sing. You know, she can't sing. She can't, you know, all this stuff.
She's got other skills.
She's got other skills. But then there's like, but then there are reasons to dislike Yoko, which is like the manipulative nature that she went to John, quote unquote, pretending that she'd never heard of the Beatles before, even though she like had approached Paul first. Like that's.
Oh, so facts. Those are facts?
Those are facts. Like
now,
that's...
now did she admit that or did
Paul, it was in an interview. It was a book, blanking on the name. I have it again. I just moved into a new place. My books are all in boxes right now.
Okay. Yeah,
but
yeah.
I have a, I think it was a book by Jeff Emmerich, who's one of their, producers. Not biographer. He was there. He was in the studio. He was one of their sound guys.
Okay.
Mixing and mastering along with, George Martin. But the, you know, he has interviews and accounts where, you know, Yoko talked to Paul first. It's like, and so there's these moments where it's like there's interviews with John and Paul or John and Yoko where you know, John's like, I was infatuated with Yoko because she's like never heard of the Beatles. She never heard that fame, and you know, she does not know Beatles,
which is slightly racist of him. Because right. if that's true, she played on that. She's like,
oh yeah,
man, we don't get television. Yeah. We don't.
And she
get
was this avant-garde artist, and you know the story is that he went to one of her art gallery shows, and there's a ladder or a step stool, and he climbed up it, and there was just a message. Yes, it was a positive message, which is why he, like, if it had said no, if it said, you know, some goofy fake answer, he would have dismissed it. But because it said yes. Because it was a positive answer, that's why he was initially infatuated, and this is why I get like frustrated with people who like complain about Yoko to an extent, because it's like John's feelings for Yoko were real, like he legitimately loved her.
Right,
and
these are actual,
like,
human beings.
This is an actual person who really cares for this person. You know, as fucked up as John's childhood and life was, it's another reason why he went full board into Yoko, who for all accounts was a fairly controlling person. That's what John needed. That he was attracted to mother figures. You know, he had mommy issues, insane mommy issues, you know.
Right.
His mom right. was killed in front of him, you know, by getting run down by a off-duty cop. You know, it was an off-duty cop that was drunk driving and it hit his mom. So
what?
That establishes the hatred for police on John's
what?
End.
That, you know, is crazy.
His aunt Mimi, who raised him, you know, would say things like, you know, the guitar is a good hobby, John, but you'll never make a career out of it. You know, and,
right.
you know, his dad didn't come into his life again until his 1975, abandoned him, you know, all, you know, made him choose.
Oh, is his aunt or his dad? His mom and dad were together. His mom was killed. No,
his mom and dad were not together. They had gotten divorced, and the dad made John choose between the two of them. Like, you got to choose who you want to come with. And initially, John,
like, there was no shared custody.
There's no shared custody here.
Wow.
Initially, John went with his dad, but then ran back to his mom. And
he's
the dad
a child.
Just left. Yeah, because he wanted mommy. And then left. And then the mom, being a teenager.
Oh, really?
Yeah, kind of let her older sister, Mimi, raise John. And would kind of come in and out of John's life as a friend. And then when they were really starting to get together, like, John's mom taught him ukulele and banjo chords, kind of taught him the fundamentals of the guitar. And you know, they were starting to get together, you know, when he was like 14, 15, starting to get a better relationship with his mom.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was killed, you know. It wasn't
right.
She wasn't murdered, but she was, you know,
right. But then she died.
She got killed. She died.
So the first, how old were, now this doesn't really, I mean, I suppose it's all fascinating. So
yeah, I think it is.
Right. And how old was he when they got divorced?
when the parents got divorced, when mom, he was, I think, in the five range, maybe five, between five, five and six. So he was young. He was a very tiny child.
Yeah.
He was very young when his dad made him choose.
Yeah.
Dad was a piece of shit that I think, you know, tried to get back into his life around 1975.
Sure.
And tried to, and John in 1975, now we're jumping all over the place right now, but
that's fine.
But, you know, John in 75 retired from music to be a dad to Sean Lennon,
okay.
which was his son from Yoko.
Right.
He had been a really shitty father to Julian, which is his son from Cynthia.
Sure sounded. I mean, just what little I know about John Lennon is he seems like an egomaniac, but a very gifted egomaniac.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing.
It's why John... I here's with cursory, not enough information about their backstory. This is what I like. I like John's stuff, I think, better in the Beatles and his solo mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah.
Though I get that Paul is, he does a lot of different, like more different stuff. He experiments so much when they break up that it's neat. Like one album to the next is very, very different.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, but Paul also was in a stable relationship with a perfectly nice woman who may or may not have been missing a leg.
So that's much later, much later. So that's 90s, that's early 2000s, Paul, when he dated the woman
without the leg.
Without the leg, yeah.
Oh, so Linda had a leg.
Linda had a leg. Linda was...
And they were together forever, right?
They were like, Paul and Linda were like the... They were together so long that they both voiced themselves on The Simpsons in the episode where Lisa becomes a vegetarian. It's the reason why Lisa is still a vegetarian, because in Paul's contract to do it, the way he agreed to do it is you can't change it back. You can't have Lisa not be a vegetarian in the next episode. She has to stay a vegetarian. And so
one of the greatest lines in all of The Simpsons is, so you're never going to eat bacon. You're never going to eat pork chops. You're never going to eat ham. Dad, those are all the same animal.
Oh, sure. Right. Lisa,
some magical animal. It's literally one of my favorite lines from The Simpsons.
And that's from that same episode when she meets Paul and Linda. And we just come to Springfield sometimes and hang out in Apu's garden in the shade. And Apu's like, I was considered the fifth Beatle. Sure you were, Apu.
That's very funny.
So they were together for a long time. Linda unfortunately died. I don't remember. It might have been cancer. I'm not positive though. I believe it was. But
that actually does sound familiar too, right?
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure that it was breast cancer, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. But then after Linda, there was Heather Mills, which was his next, I think she was the next wife, and I'm not positive she might have been the one without the leg.
Okay.
The wooden leg, I think, right, Heather Mills was.
That sounds right. That also sounds right. So yeah. Paul and Linda are together for what, 30 years? Or
yeah, yeah.
Okay.
At least 30 years.
All right. And it worked.
So that was the thing. In the 70s, the big rivalry between John and Paul was very apt, where John had Yoko in his band, in, you know, the Plastic Ono band. So Paul put Linda in his band on keyboards. You know, it's like we're rivals in everything. You know, it was a very sibling rivalry. You know, it's and John.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what were you going to say?
Well, it just seems like neither one of them were really going to ever be in bands. Like if they had not met Paul and John,
yeah,
they would have had other jobs. Like Yoko would have And she is an artist, right? Or is
she's
she
an avant-garde artist. Yeah,
and to this day, right? That's her.
To this day, yeah.
That's she her call. It's like when I say I'm an actress.
Yeah.
Am I? If someone lets me act, I love it. I enjoy it. I want to do it. But quite honestly, I'm a comic because I seek that out, and I will always be a comic. I don't know if I will always be. So I think with Yoko, she will always be an artist.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And, yeah. It is. Music is not her.
Music's not her art.
That she has to do. Yeah.
Right. That's and there's some really, you know, there's some moments in the history. And I think Bill Burr had a great did this when John Lennon is playing with Chuck Berry, who's his hero, who's his, you know, rock and roll hero.
Okay.
And they're playing together. They're playing Johnny B. Goode, and Yoko's in the corner and just starts screaming into the microphone while they're playing.
Oh.
Just.
Which. Oh, I'm sure Bill was very supportive of that.
You know, and you can see Chuck's face when she starts. He's just like.
Right.
Like. Because they're playing this rock and roll song, is, you know, and it's one of those things where it's like, that's another reason why it's like, Yoko,
right.
This is John's hero here.
Right. And it's the thing that I think is very important in a lot of relationships where you're like, well, that's your thing.
Yeah.
I shouldn't ruin your thing because I want to be part of your thing.
Yeah, like, right? John's so in love with you. He wants you with him all the time.
Right.
Awesome. Great. This happens to be the person that John looked up to the most besides Elvis and Buddy Holly, you're playing with.
Right. But if he would have been playing with Harry Chapin, it still would have been. Right. Don't do it. He's at work.
Yes.
He's at work. You're not at work. It's like taking your dick out in the green room.
Yeah.
Everybody's at work.
We're at work. What are we doing?
Right. You're actually, it's going to interrupt. It's going to blow the flow.
Disturb the flow of this whole thing.
Yeah.
It's like, and think about what the memory you want to have 20 years from now about this moment and see what actions you decide to take, you know?
And it's not adding to it. Right. Because it's whatever, like,
from it. Yeah.
Right. In this case, so very detracting from it, because that sounds horrible. But like, if you know, if Andy's doing a playtest of a new game,
yeah,
and he's looking for feedback, we all give him feedback,
of course.
But he would also like us to listen to him as he explains how to play the game. Don't be on your phone, not listening. And then when you start playing the game, you're like, "What am I supposed to do?"
You had been listening. If you had been a part of this,
if you had been
explained.
Right. If you had also thought about me while you were thinking about you. Because
have the smidgen of empathy.
Yeah.
It's smidgen.
It's just, you have to, you're part of a partnership. Be aware that there's sometimes, because we both drive each other nuts. Like, he will give me advice about the stand up, and I'm like, didn't ask for it, actually.
Yep. Exactly.
But I understand where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. You didn't get it. That is not exactly the best feedback that I've ever heard in my life. But
that's another Simpsons great quote.
Yeah.
What am I doing wrong? Well, you're falling down a lot. Work on that.
What is that, the clown?
That's when Lisa is taking a tap dance.
Oh.
And the instructor's like, tappa, tappa, tappa. I am. I just don't know what I'm doing wrong. Well, you're falling down a lot. Work on that. Thanks. Yeah. Okay. That's perfect.
Not as
advice.
Helpful. Not as helpful.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So, it's interesting that they both add them. So,
yeah.
So in that, okay. But we should actually, let's take a break. My ad. I'm about to do an ad. Rangers, this show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know me. I love therapy. I love affirmations. I love all the things that help me find a little peace of mind and a little serenity that enable me to get up in the morning, make my bed, and face the day and try to be of some use to other people, try to create some boundaries in my own life so that make sure everybody's treating me decent and just, you know, be of use and let happiness happen. And when there's hard times, I can face them. And know that tomorrow's going to be a different day. you know, whether it's better or worse, it'll definitely be different. And a better chance of solving that problem if I'm still here. You know what I'm saying? So when I'm at my best, I can show up for things, right? I can show up for myself and I can show up for other people. But sometimes life gets you bogged down, obviously, right? You're overwhelmed. It's hard to show up. It's hard to deal with life on life's terms, right? So if you want to, you can work you with a therapist can help you get closer to the best version of yourself. I've done therapy and it's helped. It helped. If you could be honest with yourself and with the person that you're working with, I have to tell you, my therapist was like, this is not a place for you to try to make me laugh because I don't want to. I want to help you. So that was what made me realize that I had to be honest in therapy. But it really helped me see what was going on and some of the patterns in my life and to let go of a lot of anger and resentment that was holding me back and help me be a better person. So if you're thinking about giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a great option, just so you know. And it's online, so you don't have to go anywhere. It's convenient and flexible. It's great. There's a questionnaire. There's a short questionnaire. You get matched up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge if it doesn't work, because sometimes it doesn't. But they have a lot of different people. They have a lot of different choices. You do this short questionnaire, you do it. So if you want to live sort of your best life and you're finding it hard right now, therapy can get you there. So just visit betterhelp.com/dork and you can get 10% off your first month. So give it a shot if you want. I mean, it's a really good idea if you're hurting, you know, try anything. Throw it at the wall, see what sticks. So BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/dork. Now let's get back into the show and people's dorkdoms. Yay. And we're back. Was there an ad? We may never know. But I would like to go back to 1966.
Yes. Yes. 1966. So
what was happening besides the war?
Well, it's a big part of what was happening is the war and the turn into psychedelics and the turn into protests and the turn into a more
less poppy kind of more
less poppy, more rock, more I guess you could say matured lyrics. I'm not going to say matured sound overall simply because I happen to think, you know, a lot of people talk about early Beatles music, you know, 62 to 64.
Okay.
As, you know, very pop, very light, you know, it's like, she loves you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to hold your hand. You know, a very, you know, lovey dovey pop, blah, blah, blah. But if you listen to the music, the musicianship of the Beatles throughout their whole career, it's very matured and very like Paul's bass lines are incredible. Ringo plays the drums for the song. You could play, you could, for somebody who knows the Beatles pretty well, not even as an expert, you could play just the drums of any Beatles song, and typically you'd probably be able to figure out which song it's for because it's so, he played it melodically, and John's rhythm guitar playing is incredible on the song All My Lovin'. John's rhythm playing of the triplets on the rhythm guitar of that song is so incredible. It's
what album is that on? To do.
That's on A Hard Day's Night.
And is that one 1966 on?
No, that's a 1962 album.
Okay, so the early stuff.
What I'm saying is, like, a lot of people would say, like, starting 1965, 66, that's when the Beatles reached kind of maturity and more musicality and more experimental stuff and all that stuff. But what I would say is they reached more experimental. They started expanding beyond their initial influences of just straight rock, and they
like Picasso. Picasso knew how to draw a normal face.
Yeah,
he just decided that I'm going to try something else.
Exactly. They were so successful that then they were able to say, "Hey, we're not going to put any covers on our albums. It's all going to be us. We're not going to do anything else." You know, because the early albums they had covers. They had, you know, Twist and Shout, Till There Was You, Act Naturally, things like that, where they were covers. But starting 65, 66, it was all just straight original Lennon McCartney or Harrison or Starkey, which is Ringo's real last name. Starkey.
Yeah. There we go.
Starkey.
Thank you. Ringo played the drums, right?
Okay. Yeah, drums and percussion. Yeah.
Okay.
So 65, 66 is when Rubber Soul and Revolver came out. Rubber Soul first, Revolver second. Revolver came out in 66, I believe. And those are two arguably the start of the Beatles kind of greatest albums of all time situation. Like,
okay.
A lot of times it's like they went more into conceptual ideas and not coincidentally, 1966 is when they met Bob Dylan and smoked weed for the first time. And
oh, they had not. But how old were they in 1966?
So they were, I think John was 26, and so
they made
Paul
it to 26 without partying. I mean, granted, I suppose weed was just becoming.
I mean, well, partying they drank they did they drank like fish, they smoked cigarettes, they were doing coke, they were rum and coke or whatever it was, you know. It's like they were doing caffeine pills.
Okay.
They were doing, you know, because they in from 1956 to 1962 they were playing Hamburg and the Cavern Club and Liverpool and like shitty clubs for 8 hour sets. Like they were hopped up. You know, they were doing, but this was the first instance of smoking weed, of psychedelics, and weed's a psychedelic, but it's in that.
Is it a gateway drug? Wait a minute. For them, it was a little bit of a gateway drug, just because it introduced them into a mellower point of view.
Yeah, it's only a gateway drug in the sense that, is there anything? What else can make me feel kind of like this? You know, it's not a gateway drug. Like, oh no, doing weed is gonna make you do heroin, even though that's the trajectory of John. But that
right,
is because
that is
of
the
trauma,
trajectory of right,
but, not
right.
of
that's
but
it's just
that was just John.
He has
not
an addictive personality,
exactly,
and he was fabulously famous and wealthy, and people
and
kept handing things to him.
Exactly, there's a difference. It's
right.
Weed is not a gateway drug.
It's very hard to be 26 and idolized
and
it
considered
is,
a god. And
right,
look at
football players. Look at actors when people hand you things, including like sex, you know,
all of it. That's the thing. The thing is that people don't always fully grasp about the Beatles and most artists from that era and artists from this era. Anybody who's famous, the Beatles were broken up by the time they were all 30.
Wow, like, they were done with that part of their lives.
In 1970, only John and Ringo were 30.
Wow.
Paul was 28, 29, something like that. Paul was done with Wings by the time he was 34.
And John was dead by the time he was 35 or 36.
Paul was dead right before
John
was dead right before his 40th birthday. He died in 1980. December 8th, 1980. And his birthday was October 9th.
Okay.
So he died when he was 40. He got shot when he was 40.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Wow.
And so, yeah, that is
that is a hell of a trajectory.
So, like, at 40 years old, John had retired in 1975 to be a stay-at-home dad.
Yep.
And then in 1980, came out with Milk and Honey, which was a big comeback album for him, and then got shot. And it was just like,
right,
you know, luckily him and Paul had made up by then. They
yep.
had the come together and stuff like that. But it was just like the age range. Like, think about. So the point being, in 66, from 1962 to 1970, the Beatles were in their 20s.
Yeah.
Think about you in your 20s.
Oh, it was a mess. And I was poor.
Yeah.
I was poor and nobody gave a shit. So imagine if everyone had cared.
Yeah. Yeah.
And had been handing me things, you know,
and there's certain,
whatever I wanted. Yeah.
And there's certain, like, there's a documentary of John making the Imagine album, which was one of his first albums post Beatles. And he's 30. He's 30 in that documentary. Yeah. And he's talking to this, like, this homeless guy or unhoused person.
Whatever the current
nomenclature is,
yep.
Comes up to John's house and tries to get in because he says John's lyrics are about him.
And
he's like, you wrote these songs about me. Like, you're talking to me.
Right.
In your music. And like, you, like, I'm supposed to be here. And John is like, well, no, I was writing them, you know, they're all about me, but, you know, hey, come inside, have some food, have, like, mm-hmm. This is a 30-year-old guy who is like, when I watch it, and, you know, like, when I first watched it, I was maybe 10 or whatever, thinking, oh, this guy is old, this is an old guy, but like, now that I'm older than he was then, I'm like, at 30 he has the wherewithal to see that this guy needs help, this guy is, you know, crazy, but he still invites him into his home, gives him a meal, and says, like, hey, you know, I appreciate you being a fan, but the music is just about me and maybe about Yoko, but that's pretty much it. Like, it's, you're reading into him, like, that's all it is, you know.
Well, I think at the time too, and because he was killed by ostensibly a fan that had gone nuts, right?
You know that Mark David Chapman ran into James Taylor before going to see John. James Taylor was at a neighboring hotel. He just told this story on Stern a couple years ago, I think. But apparently he got his autograph too.
Oh, wait, Chapman was the guy who killed?
Yeah, so Mark David Chapman was the guy who killed John Lennon and had got his autograph earlier in the night.
Okay.
And then he hunted him down and shot him. Because he was inspired, maybe the wrong word, but I don't know a better one, but the inspiration to do it was from Catcher in the Rye, which was essentially, he's like, he considered John a phony. You know, kill all the phonies.
Right.
The phonies. You sing.
He finally
Imagine.
Got to meet him, and then he was like, "Now you're
not about that. He was a super fan, but, you know, the song Imagine is essentially a socialist communist love song. You know, imagine no possessions, imagine all the people living in all the world. You know,
right? It's a utopia. Yeah,
utopia. You know, imagine no countries. Imagine everything, and you're singing it in your multi-million dollar mansion,
right?
You know, this whole, you know, you're a working class hero. Maybe you were raised up. Maybe you were raised as a working class hero. Sure. But now what are we doing? And so,
or ostensibly that was his excuse.
Ostensibly that was the excuse. And Catcher in the Rye put that in his brain of kill all the phonies.
Or he was so incredibly jealous.
He wanted to be famous. He wanted to be famous. And the way he could become famous is to become infamous. And so that's to kill the most famous person in the world. Because John Lennon in 1980 was the most famous person in the world.
Right. I would say that every
besides,
time
like,
someone
Paul and Michael Jackson and George and, you know, like all these famous people.
Right. And I would think that two things. One, the nature of fame has changed so much. And the narrative that they are is like, well, what were you reading? What made you do it? When it was really just ego, just self-absorbed insanity, where you're like, I want what he has. And when you're 7 years old, you go over and punch him in the nose and take it.
Right.
If you're a bully then.
Right.
And when you're 35 years old and just as nuts, you get a gun and you kill
somebody.
You don't
get that. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing.
Blame it on that weird Catcher in the Rye book, which, by the way, is a Ferris Bueller of a book as far as.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is like that. You're absolutely right. And it's the reason for the Catcher in the Rye quote unquote blame is because that's what he kept saying. Is I read Catcher in the Rye. That's what the narrative is. The other thing is, I said his name a couple times, but one of the things was he wanted to be famous. So most people were like, don't ever say his name again. Don't give him what he wants.
Oh, right, right. Is he still alive?
He is still alive. He's still in prison.
There's part of me that's like, what's up? What's up with that guy? Yeah.
He's still in prison. He's life without parole. Okay. He is still there. He's, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say his name again because.
Okay. Well, Manson was up for parole. They almost gave it to him.
Really?
Yeah. And you're like, no. I am so sorry. That guy's not going to use any sort of free time positively.
We can get into a whole other conversation about what the state of prison and reform and rehabilitation could be or should be and all that stuff for people like that. And, you know, it's like what's the responsibility of society for people who want to disrupt society.
I did do an episode of the Dork Forest about education in the system and how hard it is.
Yeah.
Because there's no money and there's no interest in rehabilitating normal people who get arrested. And so this sort of, you know, that would be a separate dork for sure.
And something that I'm not a dork about. So I would only be able to speculate and
we would just have anecdotes.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is another great thing about the Dork Forest is that we don't have all the information, you guys, but boy, do we have opinions.
We should do a whole Dork Forest about opinions because I'm a dork about my opinions.
I will say this too. I'm going to go back, the nature of fandom where people are like, everyone is a little more self-aware of the kind of fan they are too.
Yeah.
Because like the people who listen to this show and people who are fans of my stand-up are like, I feel like I know you. And I'm like, right. And you kind of do, but I sadly don't know you.
Yes.
Right. I mean,
There's a great line. The thing is, they are getting it now. They didn't used to get it. And I think they get it more and more now because of podcasts like this, of Marin's podcast, podcasts as a state of like learning about the person that you're a fan of. You know, it's this thing. There's a great line. Are you familiar with the group Atmosphere? They're a hip hop group out of Minnesota. Atmosphere.
As a matter of fact, I have an Atmosphere album. So there you go. It's an old one, but yes.
There's a great line in one of their songs where they go, "My fans know me better than my friends do. They know me too well to ever start a friendship."
Oh wow! Yeah,
you know it's one of these things where, and I butchered the last part of the line, but the essence of it is that idea that your fans know you so well,
right? What I always think is that we could be friends of all of my fans. I'm like, oh, I can see that you are my people. Mm-hmm. I look at my fans and go, oh, we have a fair amount in common.
Well, that's great. Because it's one of those things where like Doug Stanhope was terrified of his fans.
Well, because he has everything in common with them. It helps me want to be a better person because that's who I want to be my fans.
Yes.
But the real problem is I don't there's not enough hours in the day to hang out with all my fans, right? So I have friends and then I have fans and I can recognize in people who like my work that we could be friends if we hug out, but there's people that I'm fans of that I'm like, we should totally be friends.
They have
exactly the same attitude where they're just like, I know that we would have a lot in common, but we are not friends. I am not friends with Patton Oswalt. We couldn't have more in common.
Right.
We are acquaintances. And I am a fan of his.
Yep. I have many people like that. It's
Aisha Tyler.
Especially in the comedy world where it's like you start working with your heroes.
As you raise the ranks, people you genuinely admire. Yes.
You start working with people that I'm like, I doing shows with like Kevin Nealon or you know, like Adam Sandler, or you know, people like that that I have met and have gotten
they might
to do shows with, and
you,
and
right?
They exactly, and it's like we're not friends though.
We are not. Do
we're
you know
not.
When they, at the improv, they always do those
they
shows.
Know me. Yeah.
Yep. Well, they do those shows, like whatever, like Jackie Cation and Friends.
And Friends, yeah.
One night, Judd Apatow and Jay Leno wanted sets on the show, and I was like, and yet we are not friends. I know. I've met Judd Apatow more.
Yeah.
Actually, that's not true. I've actually met them both probably an equal amount right now.
Yeah.
But they barely know me. I barely know. I mean, I know their work.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They are very nice men. But and we are not friends.
I would say I've met
Jay
once. I
gave them sets,
once.
By the way.
Of course.
I don't know how
it would be. It would be so funny if you said, no, we don't have room for you. These are only for my friends. I'm sorry. I'm very strict on who I am.
My buddy Jim Wooster, you want to cut into his time? He doesn't get enough stage time.
You can go up anywhere. This is for friends of mine.
Yes.
I've only met Jay once at the improv, but I know Judd pretty well, actually, which is another crazy thing. It's like we became friendly. Like, I would not say that we're friends, but we are very friend. Like, we, you know, we see each other at the improv or the Comedy Store, comes up, gives me a hug. We, you know, we are friendly, and people have approached me because they've seen me talk to Judd.
Yep.
One of the funniest things that happened recently is we were, Judd and I were talking at the improv, and he had just done a set. I was about to go up in the other room. And we were talking, blah, 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 blah. It's like, well, great seeing you. I'll talk to you later. Bye, bye. He leaves. I have a beard at this time. I'm clean shaven right now, but I had a beard at the time. This woman came up to me. I don't know this woman, but she comes up to me and she starts going like, so stand-up's crazy, right? I'm like, yeah, I guess so. It's, and then she just kind of stops and goes, wait, you're not Seth Rogen.
Oh my gosh.
And I go, no, I'm not.
No.
And she goes, well, then how do you know Judd Apatow?
Oh, because he's alive and he's walking the earth.
What?
And it's a comedy club, right? It's weird.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just
that
like
is
the weirdest experience. It's like, so you only came up to me because you thought I was Seth Rogen, and that's and I knew like that.
How Yoko of her. Anyway,
right?
Let me just say to bring it back.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. The all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Whether you're selling flaky soul or fine art prints, Shopify covers all your sales channels to simplify selling online and in person. Plus, they provide industry-leading tools and 24/7 support to ignite your growth. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. To sign up, visit shopify.co.uk/podcast23, all lowercase.
Did you ever get to meet them?
So I met Paul McCartney twice.
Jeff Baldinger has met Paul McCartney twice.
Yes.
By the way, it's at Jeff Baldinger.
It's at Jeff Baldinger. I do go by Jeffrey Baldinger.
Which is weird that he would be at Jeff Baldinger,
but should be
called Jeffrey. Yes.
The reason being is there is another... we know Brian Baldinger.
Yep.
He has a brother named Jeffrey.
And
there's been some back and forth. We get along great, and it's just, but we've exchanged emails and we've apologized to each other for having the ones that the other one wants.
Right, for having names. And you could switch.
It's a different day. But yes, I'm at Jeff Baldinger on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Jeffrey Baldinger on TikTok. So
there you go.
On that front. Jeffrey.
There you go. It'll be in the notes.
Yep.
And I will. There you go.
But so I met Paul McCartney on a night. And this is actually all full circle. This is actually the night that Judd and I became friendly with each other. It was because we bonded over the fact that we were meeting Paul McCartney at the improv.
That's at the improv.
At the improv.
Wow.
It was a Comedy Juice night. If you remember Comedy Juice.
They're still doing it.
But this was back when it was at the improv. It was a Wednesday night, I believe. And
what year?
Oh, what year was it?
In the last couple of years or pre-lockdown?
It was pre-lockdown. Pre-lockdown, 2016, 2017, something like that, maybe 2018. Maybe 2018. Mm-hmm. But it was like star-studded comic lineup on the night. You know, Aziz, Joe Rogan, Jim Jefferies, Sarah Silverman, you know, like Judd Apatow, Eliza, like,
yep,
nobody could bump anybody. You know what I mean? It was one of those things where it's like we all have our spots, you know.
Okay. Were you hosting?
I was just there. I was just there.
You were just there because people were there.
Because I was hanging
to see the menagerie. Yes.
So my friend Sandy Danto was hosting. Do you know Sandy? Sandy, a hilarious comic.
Probably.
Yeah, hilarious comic. He was hosting that night. Like, I went to, you know, see him and kind of like just be, you know, just hang out, you know. And we were there and I was talking to Sandy and he just kind of, he has this glazed look over his face. He kind of looks to the side and he goes, Paul McCartney just walked in. And I go, no, he didn't. I'm just like, no, I'm not going to turn around. I'm not going to turn around. And then he's like, no, seriously, he's right there. And I turn around and there's Paul just alone. He didn't walk in with any security, nothing. He just walks in, goes into the showroom and sits down. He's just there watching the show. And it's insane. Everybody becomes level playing field then. There's no celebrities in the room anymore. There's no famous comics in the room anymore. We're all just Beatles fans.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's all just like
everybody Joe
and Aziz are talking to each other. You know, Jim is like, what do we do? Like, and then Judd turns to me and he's like, I have all of it. Like, I've put so many of his songs in my movies. Should I be able to go talk to him? And I, you know, Steve Glickman's there as well. And we're just like, we're talking to each other. We're just like, holy shit. What do we do? We can go up to him. And like, and I remember this specifically because I was just like, you know, I have all of his albums, blah, blah, blah. And Judd's like, should I go talk to him? I put so many of his songs in my movies. And I was like, well, I can't relate to that. But I think if any of us have a reason to talk to him, you would.
Right, right. You were the closest.
You're the closest.
That's an excuse. Do
that's
it.
That's a good excuse. Go up to him. Mm-hmm. And everybody's going up. And afterwards, he comes back. And it's in that hallway between the lab and
the bathrooms. Yeah.
In the bathroom area. He's going to the bathroom. And it's me, Sandy, Jim, Aziz, Judd. Just like crowding in, you know, and he's just like navigating his way through. He says to Judd, hey, good set, Mike. You know, I have a horrible accent, but
yeah, that
like,
wasn't great, you know, but I know what you're doing. Well, yeah, yeah.
Hey,
no, don't do it more.
I'm from Liverpool.
Too funny.
But so he says, you know, great job to Judd. He says, you know, he says nice things.
Yeah.
He says nice things to everybody there. And I make eye contact with him. He's like, I might. And I tap him on the shoulder. It's like, nice to meet you. And he's like, right.
And that was it.
That was my only experience. I was
that'll do.
do. And that would have done, because he was in town to play Dodger Stadium and I wasn't able to get tickets.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, I'm not going to be able to see him. But then I was able to see him.
Oh my gosh, in person. That's so crazy.
And that would have been enough. Dianu, right? that would have been enough. But then the next week, so that was a Wednesday. The next week on a Tuesday, it's an empty night, half full at the Improv.
Right.
I'm sitting in the back booth along the wall. I just gone up, you know, I had a good set, fun, you know, it's fun set, whatever. Jim Jefferies is on the show, so I'm going to stick in the room and watch him. And then Paul walks in again.
All right.
He's just there. He walks in again. He's like, and he sits next to me.
Oh, he sits in the booth?
He sits in the booth next to me.
Did you tell him it was for comics only?
I did. I was like, hey, I'm sorry you can't sit here. This is just for the comics. You gotta cut it out. You gotta
talk to the door guy. He's gonna put you in the front row so that you can maybe be in a reel.
There is a 2-drink minimum, and I'm sorry, but
he just sat next to you.
He just sat there, and we just sat. I didn't say anything to him. He didn't say anything to me.
Yep.
We just sat and watched Jim Jeffries, and I noticed how much he laughed at some of the darker of Jim's material, and it was just a delight for me to watch him
laugh at Jim Jeffries.
I was just like, it was just so amazing. He was there 3 times in that month.
Okay.
I was only there for the first time and the third time. The second time that he was there, which I was unfortunately not there, but that's when he took pictures with everybody. I don't know if you've seen pictures with...
Nope.
You know, there's a few of my friends have great, amazing, funny pictures with Paul McCartney. That was the second time that he was there. I was there the first and the third time. I don't have any pictures with him, but I have those two stories, and those are good enough for me. It's pretty incredible.
And I think because it's so hard when you meet someone that famous to not be a weirdo. And the fact that you were not a weirdo was, I think, a greater triumph.
Not to be a weirdo. I tried my best not to bother him, but also be a person to him.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Within that 6-month period.
Yeah.
In that time frame, I met Paul twice, and I met Brian Wilson once. So Brian Wilson is the genius behind the Beach Boys. Close.
Guess what?
Not even close. Not a close.
Not close at all. It's a great opportunity for someone to go, oh, she finally said something completely insane. Brian Wilson, famous for being like sort of the genius of the Beach Boys, right?
Of the Beach Boys. Yep.
Not the Eagles.
That's Don Henley and Glenn Frey, I think.
Sure.
I met Brian Wilson because I got to go to the premiere of the movie Love and Mercy. Did you see that movie?
Nope.
Amazing movie. Paul Dano and John Cusack play young and old Brian Wilson. It's about the story of writing Pet Sounds, which is one of the greatest albums. Is considered one of the greatest albums of all time.
I own that one.
Yeah, Pet Sounds. And this will all take back to the Beatles because it's one of the because Sergeant Pepper's was made in response to Pet Sounds, which then helped in breaking Brian Wilson's mind.
Oh, God. All right. So you got to meet Brian Wilson.
So I got to meet Brian Wilson at this premiere. Anybody who's a fan of the Beach Boys, especially, but anything in the 60s. Watch that movie. It's so good. Paul Dano is brilliant as Brian Wilson, as a young, as in the 60s, Brian Wilson. But so everybody's at this premiere, like everybody who ever played with the Beach Boys. And I don't think I'm going to be able to meet anybody, you know, but just like I'm just there because I'm a guest of a guest, you know, So I'm standing in the back while everybody's like coming down the stairs and, you know, coming like, oh, this is, I'm just like, I'm not even going to try to get close. And so I'm in the back by the bar in the back. And I just out of the corner of my eye, I see the silhouette that I recognize. Like I turn over and it's just Brian Wilson sitting alone in a chair away from the entire crowd, just hiding.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, well,
that feels par for the course. By the way.
Yeah. And so all I do is I go up to him, I shake his hand, I stick out my hand, and I say, thank you. And he shakes my hand, and he goes, okay. Okay.
Okay.
And that's all, that was the only interaction. I just said, because I'm like, as I'm going up to him, I'm like, what can I say? What can I say? What can I say? There's nothing to say.
I have nothing to say to him.
Other than,
a huge fan.
Thank you.
That is all.
Like, that's it. And so I'm just going to say thank you, and that's it. That's all I need.
And he will accept that thanks. And
whether or not he would or not is the only thing that I can say. He happened to have accepted the thanks. And I feel very honored that within the 6-month period, I met Paul McCartney and Brian Wilson. And it's.
And
like,
we're in
you know,
an hour. Jeffrey.
We are. At, Jeffrey, we haven't even gotten to 1967.
But we did jump ahead.
We did jump ahead and behind.
And it was a fascinating dive into the into some of the psychology of it all. So
yeah.
By the way, I've been talking with Jeffrey Baldinger.
Yep.
And it's at Jeff Baldinger on Twitter and Instagram, and at Jeffrey Baldinger on TikTok. And you got a show in Huntington Beach in February 24th, and you're in Seattle July 20th.
Yep, exactly.
And go and find him. Just follow him on Instagram, and then you'll find out where he is locally and all the things. And
absolutely.
Thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you for having me. And as last time, we had a few emails coming in and corrected me on some information that I got, like, incorrect.
Sure.
Please do it again, because while I am a very dork about the Beatles, sometimes I misremember some things. And so,
and it turns out you would like to talk about the Beatles.
I love talking about the Beatles. I love talking about the Beatles.
So if the information was incorrect, feel free to DM, slide into Jeffrey's DMs.
Come at me. Don't
at me.
Not in an aggressive way, you know, like, hey, let's talk about it friendly, like, you know?
Thanks so much for doing the show. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?